It's duck season. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Politics. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
All I can say to your opening is, no, it's wabbit season, fire.
Yeah, okay. I hope that many of our listeners also got my veiled reference to a classic Bugs Bunny cartoon. Something I remember growing up was the whole duck season cartoon where Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny are trying to debate among themselves who Elmer Fudd the Hunter is going to go shooting at. Well, you know, Chuck, I really wish that it was only Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, but what we have now is the Obama administration and the fact that the sitting president is truly what we call, in political parlance, a lame duck. He is in the last of his two terms of office. He, according to the current structure of our Constitution, and I say that with a healthy grain of salt right now, according to the current structure of our Constitution, he is ineligible to run again or to hold the office of president for any further terms, which means that now that he is in his second term, he is in his last term. And Chuck, you hear from people and you hear talk and they're all upset and Obama and how bad and how much he's done to us, etc. But see, that's the beauty of our constitutional system. And that is that even if the general populace somehow mentally checks out and elects somebody who is a danger to our form of government and our way of life, like I will say Barack Obama is, at least the provisions of our constitution have allowed that he loses power as he goes further in office. And I don't mean constitutionally they step him down, but the point is right. That he becomes a lame duck, which means that members of Congress, which is the main branch that should have checks on the actions of the executive, are waxing in power while he wanes in power. So he can pronounce and push and ask for a lot of things, but they know that at some point he's going to be gone, and so therefore they can just wait him out. And we saw this start to be exercised a little bit, and I think it's providential, Chuck, that during last week there was a push in the United States Senate, which is majority controlled by the Democratic Party, Barack Obama's own party, for gun control. It was the Manchin-Toomey-Schumer idea of having background checks at gun shows and requiring paperwork for private transfers of firearms and using that as a ride-along to a bill that would outlaw many types of firearms from being able to be legally possessed in this country. And this was one that the president really hung his hat on. This was going to be a signature moment of his administration to get this gun bill passed, and it didn't happen.
Well, the term is legacy, and what Barack Obama was hoping to do was say, go down in history as the president who both shoved socialized health care down the throats of the American populace and banned guns. And what that would do, of course, would get his name enshrined alongside Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who basically shoved socialized retirement and a whole bunch of other socialized stuff down the throats of the American people, and then were able to claim that somehow that he was able to kill the Depression by doing that, which, of course, is nonsense. He turned what should have been basically a two-year downturn in business, he and Herbert Hoover combined, turned what should have been a two-year downturn and maybe a two-year-long depression, maybe three, into a 17-year-long nightmare. And no, World War II did not cure the Great Depression. So you mentioned a number of things that came to my mind. One of the first things that came to my mind that you mentioned was the fact that the voters had mentally checked out when he was elected. And that's obvious. But let's say something about that. Had they voted for Mitt Romney, they also would have had to mentally check out.
Well, yes.
Let's be clear about that. One of the main problems that we have right now in this country with our political structure is that everyone is checked out mentally. Not everyone, but most people are checked out mentally. Well, they're not thinking rationally, they're thinking emotionally. And what was the big push to get you and guys like you and me to vote for Mitt Romney? He's better than Obama.
Right. And a vote for anybody else other than Romney was a vote for Barack Obama, regardless of whether you voted for third party or you voted for yourself. Which, no, we didn't do that. But yeah, you're right, Chuck. But the other big problem is that we've gotten into a situation now where instead of looking at candidates to see if, number one, they match the biblical qualifications to be a leader, and number two, the constitutional qualifications to be president of the United States, and number three, that we know enough about their background and their dealings in order to understand their character, most people just say, well, this one's promised me all this great stuff, or this one's more charismatic, or I feel like he'll be a better person.
Well,
the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, who can know it, especially in politics. And so there are a lot of people, a lot of our friends, who willingly self-deceived in order to support their Hobson's choice.
And that's a big problem, because you've got people out there who really are for candidates because they're quote-unquote popular. Well, that's no reason to vote for someone.
No.
The reasons that one of the things that we fight for over and over and over is that you look at the character and the biblical qualifications for people to hold high office, and you judge candidates on that basis. Someone may have none of the biblical qualifications and still have high character, and do you then vote for him? Well, I think even that's a mistake, because that was part, you know, Mitt Romney was a family man. He was a great businessman, you know, this, that, and another
right.
thing.
And, and Mormons are great, high character, moral character, yeah. et cetera. Yes.
Yeah, and I wouldn't argue with that necessarily. That's a generalization like anything else, but right. the man is a member of a cult. He was pro-abortion. He was anti-gun. He was pro-socialized healthcare, as noted by the fact that he is the father of the Massachusetts plan, which is the basis of the plan that Obama...
Of Obamacare, yeah, that's right. Massachusetts healthcare was the prototype for Obamacare.
So, you know, it's not just on one side of the aisle. So, lest you think that we're being highly critical of one side and not the other, okay, we just dispelled that myth.
Well, yeah, the knife cuts both ways.
That's right.
But the key thing is, with this, and honestly, this is probably the only upside that I see to the fact that Barack Obama actually won a second term, is that now he's a lame duck, which means that he is becoming impotent politically. And as a matter of fact, and we're looking at an article from the American Thinker blog site, AmericanThinker.com, called "I Know Why the Lame Duck Squawks" by Clarice Feldman. Now, Ms. Feldman writes some interesting stuff, and one of the things she really points out here is that what happened was they bring this up and they force a vote on this, what's called the Manchin-Toomey-Schumer Amendment, which was a deal brokered by West Virginia's Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, Republican Senator from Pennsylvania Pat Toomey, and New York Senator Chuck Schumer. And they pushed that first, that they had to have that vote first. Harry Reid wanted to push that. The amendment, which honestly was, I believe, that was a test, Chuck. That was a litmus test. He
yes.
wanted to see if they can get this amendment, this rider about gun shows, through the Senate. Then he knew that the main bill, the gun ban piece, Feinstein's bill, would probably pass as well. So they called up the vote on the amendment, and they got skunked. Numerous members of even the Democratic Party voted against this amendment. There were a small handful of Republicans who voted for it, but not enough to get to the 60-vote margin they needed for passage. Well, when Harry Reid saw this and saw that the amendment went down in flames, he understood that for right now, so would the gun ban bill, so he pulled the bill from the calendar for consideration. Now, it's interesting because Harry Reid was endorsed by the National Rifle Association, the NRA, in his last race, but this was a man who really wanted to bring this up so that he could feel out how well they could get gun control, how they could get a gun ban. I don't see that as being a pro-gun position whatsoever, Chuck, and it doesn't fool groups like Gun Owners of America, who don't endorse Harry Reid in any way, shape, or form. But going back around to the president, because after that, he called a press conference, many people have heard about it, where he basically had a temper tantrum and threw a fit about the fact that they didn't give him what he wanted. Well, that just points out, according to Tim Stanley over at the London Telegraph newspaper, he says that Obama's a lame duck president. Nobody listens to what he says anymore. Nobody's interested in winning his approval. I guess he didn't see that John McCain is petulantly fawning at Obama's feet every chance he gets, because somehow John McCain seems to still want his approval. And nobody much cares if he thinks they have, quote, let the country down. That's what Obama said about those who voted against the Manchin-Toomey Amendment. And he says, this is typical for a second-term president who's lost all their leverage because they're no longer running for office, and everybody's patiently waiting for the day when he quits the White House. And I think that Stanley is onto something here. I think what we're going to see is the fact that even Barack Obama may have started to realize he's not all that and a bag of chips anymore.
Well, yes. And here's what's happened, Barry. This man, I hate to make the comparison.
Oh, go ahead.
Think about Robert E. Lee.
Okay.
At Gettysburg.
Uh-huh.
Robert E. Lee had developed the idea that he and his men were invincible and that he could do anything.
Right, except that he was like psychologically worried and concerned the fact that his main general, Stonewall Jackson, had been killed
prior to Gettysburg,
and he kind of thought that possibly that might have been a fatal wound to the entire effort.
Yeah, but if you read what Longstreet talked about at Gettysburg, he basically said, we can't do, no army on earth could do what you want them to do. Now, I won't kid you that they didn't come close a couple times, but the fact is that they didn't have Stonewall Jackson. And they simply, having men march en masse uphill into cannon fire...
Not the best strategic move.
...is a recipe for disaster. And what basically Barack Obama was ordering his troops to do was to march uphill into massed cannon fire on this gun control thing. People don't want it. You can sit around and have the news media spout about how they've got 90% approval and this and that and another thing. Barry, I'm here to tell you, you and I both know about polling. It's how you ask the question. Nobody wants crazy people to be able to get guns.
Right.
But the way to stop it is not to force private transactions when I sell my gun to my neighbor or to my nephew or something.
Or to one of your children, because that was included in it as well.
That was included in the bill. That should be under the scrutiny of the federal government. Crazy people get things, and they get them. If he can't buy it from somebody who would take a look at him and say, I'm not going to sell you a gun. And my dad was a federal firearms license dealer, and so was my father-in-law. And I can tell you that people will walk in the shop and they'd be like, I'm not selling you a gun. So you don't think there was self-policing? You bet there was and is. So these guys can get them. They go down to the corner and buy them just like criminals do. They buy stolen ones. And background checks and closing the quote-unquote gun show loophole would do nothing. Nothing.
No, not at all. Rich, is the reason why many believe that this entire push for gun control honestly is less about actually trying to, quote-unquote, protect the citizenry and make people safe and end potential Newtown massacres, but more about trying to gin up the Democrat base for 2014 so that the Democrats could take the House back. And so they would control both chambers of Congress and then ram through a lame duck's agenda. And honestly, Chuck, I see that, but one of the things that Stanley points out in his blog from The Telegraph, and he says this, he goes, America has 4 more years of this lame duck president telling them it has let him down. If only he could tear up the Constitution and rule by diktat, he might save himself a little disappointment. He says, alas, American democracy, which we're not, is a stickler for rules. And that, Chuck, leads me into the thinking of, and the reason why that so many people are trying to get conservative groups to call for an Article 5 constitutional convention
is
so we can tear up that Constitution and that Obama or others can rule by diktat.
Well, I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. Barry, let's put in a plug for our conference coming up. If you want to understand these issues from a biblical perspective, and that's what we talk about here on this program, a biblical perspective. If you want to understand these issues, we have an excellent conference coming up Friday and Saturday, April 26th and 27th. It will be held at Grace Presbyterian Church on Postlethwaite Road in Northwest Columbus. It's really easy to find. It's just off Bethel Road. So we would invite you to go to our website at www.principledpolicy.com. Have a look at our website. And sign up for the conference. We have seats left, and we would invite you to come in and get a biblical perspective on all kinds of different things. We talk about faith for all of life and how the church should impact the world by impacting all areas of life. That includes science, that includes government, that includes history. In fact, our keynote speaker, Dr. Joe Moorcraft, is an eminent Christian historian, and we would invite you to come out. That being said, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.